Khalashing for Khalas? Want to bri or fine dine? Stay tuned to High FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for SN Fresen Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m. where it's all about the food.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the SN Fresen show on this Tuesday morning. I'm Adrian Bugatti, your host for today. With lockdown, I've been experimenting more than usual with my cooking, sometimes successfully and sometimes not so much. But during this time, my middle daughter, who is at a very small school, so they've been able to open, has also had to do her cooking practicals for consumers, which we used to call home economics. Now, for consumers, there are set recipes that these kids have to follow, and with her not being at a Jewish school, they're using the regular textbook. It has come as a bit of a problem because some of the recipes are using, well, in fact, most of the recipes either want non-kosher ingredients or they want us to mix ingredients that we can't, like milk and meat, or the fact that some of the ingredients are just not available as kosher. So we've had three big challenges in the last 2 months. And the first one was a no-bake cheesecake. My daughter makes the best cheesecake, no-bake cheesecake. I love it. And I'm not a fan of the non-baked, the fridge cakes. I much prefer Alan Bender's baked cheesecakes. But this one is delicious, and we've made it a few times. So for the school recipe, they wanted gelatine. Now, we've tried making the cheesecake with the fish gelatine, the kosher gelatine available. It doesn't have a nice taste. It just has this odd taste, not a fishy taste, just not right. Then we had a look. Now, I'm used to using agar-agar to make things like panna cottas and other jelly desserts, but they can be a little bit finicky if you're not sure how to use it. And during a practical at school, where her nerves are getting the best of her, we decided better not to try an experiment with a new product that she's never used before. So thankfully we were lucky, and her school teacher and the moderator agreed that she can use her regular cheesecake recipe. The cheesecake recipe is from Martha Stewart's website, and it is always fantastic. She uses Mari biscuits as the base to make it. They do sometimes, you know, some of the recipes ask for your pre-made pie crusts, which we can't really get here, especially kosher. So she makes her packet of biscuits, which she has fun bashing up and then mixing with the melted butter to make her base. It was outstanding, and she did very, very well. Her cheesecake was ready a lot faster than everybody else's because apparently the cheesecake using gelatine had to sit overnight in the fridge, where hers was done within like 15 minutes. But we've been very lucky. The next recipe came up with spaghetti bolognese with cheese. So thankfully we were able to leave off the cheese. She did very well with that, despite not being able to taste anything, because she really does not like spaghetti bolognese. She doesn't like mincemeat at all. And then this last final week that she had to do her thing, she had to make two recipes, which was quite a stressful thing because neither of them recipes have ever been made before. The first one was a carrot cake, and like she said, why would you put vegetables in a cake? Anyway, the cheesecake turned out really, really well. It was a bit confusing also with a buttercream icing instead of our normal cheese, cream cheese icing that most of us are used to, but it still was really delicious. And as she said, you couldn't even taste the carrots. So that was great. The dogs enjoyed it too, much to her disgust. Then we had our biggest challenge. Now, this was something that got her into an absolute panic before we started our research. And that's something called chicken cordon bleu. Now, the traditional recipe for a chicken cordon bleu is you take a chicken breast that you flattened, you put a piece of cheese in, and you put a slice of ham, and then you roll it up and fry it. This for her was a big thing. How are we going to do this? And she had to make it. So we went looking around for kosher versions, And the most we found were to use cheese sauces, which she wasn't going to be able to do, as it made an extra element to the recipe for school and we didn't need the extra stress. In the end, we came up with something that cost us a bit of a fortune, but it was so well worth it. It was absolutely delicious and we will make it again next year when the budget allows. The kosher version included pastrami slices instead of the ham. It has that nice saltiness and that nice flavor. And then the Woolworths vegan cheese slices, because the recipe for school asked for sliced Gouda, the pre-packed ones. And often with the vegan cheeses, they don't melt the way we would expect a cheese to melt. But because it works the same way as a processed cheese, it got soft and it was absolutely delicious. It has a stronger flavor than the Gouda cheese, but was really, really absolutely delicious. She enjoyed having to hammer out the chicken breasts to make them all even sizes. And then the part she didn't like was the dipping first into flour, then into egg, and then into your breadcrumbs to make it, and then you've got to fry it. So the last three steps for her were a bit of an issue. She hates frying things, mostly probably because I don't fry a lot of stuff, just because I want to be a little bit more healthy. But we did it, and she did really, really well with that. And it's definitely on my menu for next year for Purim, because that is the day I make my treif meal. I do a mock treif meal, often using cheese and vegan meat, or I'll do like a cream sauce with a vegan thing. Last year I did vegan style prawn dish. So each year I like to make a fun meal that we would not normally eat. So this is going to definitely go onto that menu. Now, over the years, I have stood in for my son, who is a mashgiach at a luxury resort. And I've been helping them plan their kosher meals based on their treif menu, because their whole effort is to get their kosher guests to have the exact same experience as other guests. And with this, I have learned that you can turn just about anything kosher with a little research and a knowledgeable chef on hand. So I'd like to thank Alan Bender and Doron Gavronsky for their help when I send off my messages and my panicked phone calls. But since most of us don't have a chef in our kitchen, I thought maybe today's show could be about converting recipes and also how to do measurements, as well as looking at, for after lockdown, how to plan for a large family function when we've got lots of guests. Now, that could be different for everybody. In my home, just the family can be 8. In other homes, you're 4. And when you have guests, 10 is a lot of people. For me, 20 is a lot of people. And in the days before I had children, we used to do lots of Sheva Brachot for friends who were getting married. And we often had at least 40 people for a meal. Those were the days where we weren't so careful with our money. And, you know, it was just a lot easier, a lot cheaper. It was the first time I ever learned to use plastic plates, because I hated that. And it's still, for me, a bit of a difficulty. To me, a proper dinner must be on nice plates. And that's taken a little bit of getting used to, but we did it and that was a lot of fun. But I learned how to plan my meals then already, even though I didn't know that that was how I was learning. When we come back, I'm going to talk about being able to double your recipes. But in the meantime, let's take a quick break and we'll be back. This is Adrian Bugatti and you're listening to the Essen Fressen Show.
You're listening to the Essen Fressen Show on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. I'm Adrian Bugatti and you are listening to the Essen Fressen Show on High FM this Tuesday morning. I've been talking up until now just about learning to take a non-kosher recipe and turn it into kosher. specifically I was talking about the school because my daughter doesn't go to a Jewish day school. But one of the things that I've learned, and it's becoming easier and easier here in South Africa, is if your budget allows it, you can turn pretty much anything into kosher. The other thing I've learned to do over time is that when I'm using an American recipe or a recipe from overseas and it asks for an ingredient that is either not easily available or not available at all in South Africa, or the kosher version is just far too expensive and I only need like a tablespoon of the ingredient and you can only buy a bottle of 250 mols. I've learned to do a lot of those. So things like hoisin sauce, I've learned how to make it, and that's on my website for anyone who wants to check it out. The website is kosheringyourlife.co.za. The other thing I've learned to do is to learn to substitute. So often it'll ask for something like a fish sauce. Fish sauce, if I'm making stir-fry beef, is not a possibility because the fish sauce is made from usually anchovies or something like that. And therefore, even though the flavor is not 100%, I will either use Worcester sauce or a combination of Worcester and soy sauce to get that nice saltiness added to your meal. So don't be afraid to experiment. I often need the new flavor, the talk of all the cooking shows is umami, which is almost like an Asian flavor. It's umami actually just means delicious, but it's a nice salty flavor. And for that, as much as I really dislike it, I use bovril. And that's a big thing that I've learned to add, especially to stews and sometimes even to soups, just to give it that extra flavor. With the soups especially, I don't use stock powders or stock cubes. So having a teaspoon of the bovril or marmite, whichever one you want to use, in your meal is a big bonus. Please just remember that marmite is the kosher one and bovril is not. So if you are kosher, be specific and use marmite. Now, one of the things that I've learned from cooking is that I cannot bake cakes or biscuits. Something about them that just does not agree with my cooking skills. I can make them in a pinch if I need to, but they're not anywhere as good as, say, my mother, who makes the most amazing cakes and biscuits, or now, more recently, my daughter, who suddenly discovered a love of baking. So I'm happy to hand that over to them anytime. One of the most specific things, my older daughter also has a problem with baking. She is more of an intuitive cook, and therefore her and I are better suited to things like stews, like actual food and cooking, as opposed to baking. Baking is a specific science. Measurements must be exact, or you often land up with a disaster. The flavor might be wrong, the consistency, suddenly your cake doesn't rise properly for whatever reason, or you can't get it to set in the middle. Like for me, my biggest challenge is I cannot make decent brownies. Have no idea why. I follow these recipes exact, and they're either pure liquid in the middle or they are chocolate cake with too much chocolate in. She, thankfully, my older daughter and my middle daughter have both learned how to make delicious brownies. On the other hand, come Pesach cooking, I can make the best ginger cake ever, but I cannot make a normal ginger cake using plain flour. Have no idea what is wrong or what I am doing wrong, but that's the way it is. So you have to understand that not everybody can do everything. Basic baking skills, I can do those as long as you're not expecting great results. Edible results, yes. Fantastic results, no. Now, the very specific thing about baking is you cannot double recipes. Baking recipes are mostly scientific, and even though I have followed a scientific career in nursing, the most I can do is formulas and for dosages. baking for me is just not something I've been able to do. And you need to be a expert baker to understand when you can double your recipe and when you cannot. And until I can find someone who can teach me, that won't be happening. However, I can bake anything with yeast. Any kind of bread you want, I'm your girl to go to. Whether it's babkas, whether it's pot breads, whether it's seed loaves, no problem. And they are easy to double. Very easy. In fact, I have a machine called a Thermomix. It is my favorite kitchen appliance and unfortunately no longer available in South Africa. Otherwise, I would tell everybody to get one, even if it breaks the budget and I'm still paying for it 3 years later. The Thermomix cannot take my full challah batch, so I've had to break it into three. Very easy. I do it in three, and it makes the most amazing challahs. It hasn't changed the flavor of my recipe at all. The reason I have to make it into three, as I said, it doesn't take the full challah batch, and to be able to take my challah with a bracha, I need that full batch. So what I do is I do my three batches and then put it together in a bowl, knead it together so it joins, and there I've used it. But I often will use one batch of that recipe just to make a bread, you know, normal lunch bread. It's the kids love the sweet flavor of your normal challah. Now, with food, I have learned that cooking with liquids, you often don't need to double the liquid. So if you're making a stew or something, in the beginning I used to double whatever they were asking for and their flavors and that. It didn't make a difference. It just usually made too much liquid. So when you are doing stews, keep your liquids to the same amount. If, however, you're making sauces or gravies, then you might want to double depending on how many people you're serving. So I would say a cup of gravy or a cup of sauce would be easy to use on six people. Whereas if you're having about 10, then you would need another conversion. You would need to double that easily. Another big issue that we have with converting recipes is the American recipes, and even though the British are using metric, they're still using a different system to us. Their metric and mine seem to be a little different. And they're often using ounces and, you know, and pounds for their measurements, where we're using kilos. So that's quite a problem. And here's something that a lot of us need to understand. One cup of flour measures 150 grams, depending on where you're looking. Because one site I found said it was 120 grams. So that doesn't work out well. Also, please remember that your flour, a cup of flour is not 250 mils. You know, if you're measuring, if they're asking for 150 grams, sorry, let's put it this way. If they're asking for 150 grams, that is not 150 mils. Now, if you're in the US, a cup is 240 mils. But if you're here in South Africa, a cup is 250 mils. And then you print out a recipe and the recipe asks for half a pint. Guess what? Half a pint is 300 mils. Now, if you're using cream, they're sold in 250 mil bottles. So once again, it's a little bit different. What I actually do with that, I cheat a little. If it's asking for half a pint, I'll take my 250 mils of cream and I'll add 50 mils of water. I just, you know, you don't want to have to go out and buy two things of cream and then land up having half, three quarters of a container of cream sitting in your fridge going off. It doesn't work that way. When I buy my measuring jugs and my spoons and stuff like that, one of the things I've made sure to look at is that the measuring cups have ounces, pints, and milliliters on it, as well as cup measurements. I find it a lot easier, and then it's much easier to use a recipe from somewhere else than to use, you know, to try and sit there with your calculator and convert. And my teaspoons and measuring spoons also, if it says a tablespoon, it also says 15 mil. so that we know how much it is. The next thing is, how many of you get recipes where it asks for a dash or a pinch? Well, have you ever wondered how much that is? Because I did, and I've discovered that a dash is 1/16 of a teaspoon, and a pinch is 1/8. Not really helpful, is it? Because where are you going to get 1/16 of a teaspoon? However, you can get 1/8 of a teaspoon. They do come available. My measuring spoons all have that in there. So that's an important thing. Now, the other thing that often happens is the recipes want a knob of butter. So that's a very big favorite when I'm watching like a Gordon Ramsay video or something. He goes, just put a knob of butter in. So from what I've been able to tell from his knob of butter, it's actually 2 tablespoons of butter. And believe it or not, when you are using, if you're wanting to convert your butter or margarine into oil, 2 tablespoons is 2 tablespoons, whether it's in liquid form or in solid form. So that's a nice, that's finding a nice, easy conversion. So I found 2 sites where this was not too much of a problem. The first site that I found is a lady, it's called ShanazParkerCooking.com. She has a cooking school. So Shanaz is spelled S-H-A-N-A-A-Z, and then the surname Parker, cooking, all one word. And she has a whole list of conversions on her website, which does make things easier. However, my go-to is still a book that was first published in 1975. I've had mine for the last 28 years, and that is the original Arcadia recipe book. In the first 5 pages, it is only conversions, okay? It's temperatures, liquids, weights, oven and gas temperatures. It even tells you your altitude temperatures. So if you're baking at the coast and if you're baking in up above sea level, it tells you what temperatures you're looking at. It also talks about your baking powder. I know my mother always says at the coast you can add the baking powder anytime, but up here in Johannesburg, you need to add your baking powder at the end of your dry, you know, apparently it has something, some effect on the cake. I'm not sure. And it also tells you how many teaspoons you need it each thing. So it's got sea level, it's got meters and feet above sea level, it's got everything I needed in there. And that's where I found out where my dash of measurement came from, and that's 1/8 of a teaspoon. It also works out cups to pints, and then it's got the approximate equivalents for metric, British, and American. Sounds odd because apparently the British are on metric system, but maybe not. They still use ounces, pounds, and that kind of thing. So that's an important thing to remember. Now, even though we're not allowed to entertain at the moment, one of the things that I wanted to look for was when you're sitting down and entertaining guests, or if you just have a really large family and you'd like to keep your food costs down, which is one of the things that I do with meal planning, and that's making just enough. Obviously, you're not going to make it so that nobody can eat anything, that they all leave the table hungry. But these are approximations of how much you need to order when you want to order your meat or your fish or when you want to cook just whatever it is you need to. So when I sit down to a meal with just my family, there are usually 8 of us. As soon as we add the grandmothers in or aunts or uncles or friends, we can land up with 20 people. And once upon a time before the children were born, we did a lot of Sheva Brachot. So I often had 40 people at a Friday night meal. This is where I learned to use my plastic knives and forks and plastic plates. Still hate doing it. To me, a proper sit-down dinner means glassware and silver and proper utensils. But I've learned, and we do them. Plastic is now the way to go, even with a dishwasher. just easier for cleaning up. But now we want you to know, you're sitting down for Yantav, or it's a family function, you're finally allowed to have guests again for the first time. So how do you know how much to make? Well, let's start at the beginning. The first one is appetizers. With a meal that's going to be followed possibly by soup, maybe a meat course and then a dessert course, you need to look at it this way. And this is from a catering book that an old, I'd say a 50-year-old school book on consumers or home economics or whatever you want to call it. Appetizers with a meal to follow should apparently be a choice of four different appetizers with 6 to 8 pieces per person. And that gives you 2 pieces of each appetizer. So if your appetizers are things like sushi, you now know how many people you need to feed. So you're going to have 4 different types of sushi, whether you have sandwiches, where you maki, sashimi, whatever it is, there need to be 4 different kinds of that. And then you want 6 pieces for each person, 6 to 8 pieces for each person. So for 10 people, you can look at around about 80 pieces of sushi. And that's only if it's a starter and not if it's the main course. Now, how much cold drink do you need to bring? Or how much water are you going to need, or fruit juice or iced tea or whatever you're going to be serving? Well, that is 1 to 2 glasses per person per hour. So if you want a long lingering dinner, then just remember you need more to drink. And iced tea is great for that. The flavored teas, make them into jugs if you've got enough jugs, and put them on the table rather than the sodas. First of all, it's a lot healthier and it's a lot cheaper. So that's an important thing to remember. Otherwise, please ask your guests. If you've got 10 people coming and you know you guys are going to spend at least 3-4 hours, you can ask each guest to bring 2 cold drinks with them. And then you should have more than enough for everybody at your table. We're going to take a break now. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about the rest of the meal. This is Adrian Bugatti, and you're listening to the Essen Fressen Show.
You're listening to the Essen Fressen Show on 101.9 High FM.
Hello and welcome back to the Essen Fressen Show. You're listening to Adrian Bugatti, and I have been talking about converting recipes, and now we're discussing how much to serve at a meal. And how do you work that out so that you don't have food wastage and you don't do the big worry of, I didn't have enough food to serve everybody and all those things. Money at the moment for everybody, especially when we are going to be allowed to have our visitors over, is going to be a little tight. A lot of us have had to cut back due to job losses or even short time during COVID. So I've spoken about how much you need for appetizers and how much you need for soft drinks. And now we're moving on to soups. Now, if your soup is being served as one of your courses, you actually only need to give everybody 1 cup of soup at a time. So that's about 2 ladlefuls or 1.5, depending on how much you've made. But just remember, if you've got, like me, these very large soup bowls, 1.5 ladles does not look like a lot. But don't be fooled. It's plenty for everybody, and they can always ask for seconds if they want. So 10 people, you need 2.5 liters of soup. Please remember when you're making the soup that as it boils and the flavors develop, some of it's going to evaporate. So always make a little bit more so that when it's evaporated, you have exactly the right amount. Now we're going to talk about your main course. I know a lot of people still insist on doing a meat and a chicken as main course so that people can have one of each. It works out very expensive, but if that's how you want it, I'm glad for you, and please enjoy it. So when you're going to do that, you're going to cut back on your portion sizes. So first I'm going to talk about how much to have when you're only having one option. So a boneless roast, you want to measure 250 grams per person. So when you're shopping, you're going to look for 10 people. You want at least a 2.5 to 3 kilo roast. This will allow for a bit of shrinkage and each person will get the right amount of meat. If you are getting a roast or you're making something like a shoulder, you want to measure 400 grams per person because you've got the bone in and that's going to take away a lot of your meat. So look into it that way. And that makes if you're only serving one option. The same with chicken. If you're using a whole chicken or chicken pieces, you're measuring about 2 pieces per person. So a normal sized chicken can be cut into 8 pieces minimum. You've got your 2 breasts, 2 thighs, 2 drumsticks, 2 wings. Now the wings, I often don't count because I think I'm the only person who actually will eat them. And I would often use those wings, put them aside and use them in my soup. But also depending on the size of your chicken, that breast can be cut into 2, which means you've got an extra 2 pieces. When you're looking at chicken on the bone, so if you've bought chicken pieces, you need to look at about 350 grams per person or 2 pieces per person. Just remember that most children prefer drumsticks. There are very few children that I've found that will eat any other piece of chicken. So count in, take into account how many children you have and count 2 drumsticks depending on the age. If you are using chicken without the bone, you're still going to use only 250 grams of chicken, and that's still 2 pieces per person, unless you're doing a big schnitzel or something like that, and then you just do 1 large piece. When you are looking at doing both chicken and meat together, you are going to do 150 grams of boneless roast and 150 grams of chicken. That will give them a proper 300 grams of meat to eat. Now we're looking at side dishes. Side dishes, if you're going to serve potatoes, rice, couscous, or quinoa, you're looking at about 40 grams per person. A potato is a small, medium potato. One potato is usually about 75 to 100 grams, depending on the size. If you'd like to be a little bit more health conscious, serve them the baby potatoes rather than a normal potato. When you are doing your rice or your couscous or your quinoa, it's about 1/4 cup per person. Vegetables, things like carrots, broccoli, or green beans, still works out to 1/4 cup per person, but that measures 85 grams. So you will know how much to put on a plate. You know, you're not going to stand at the table when you're serving up your supper with a measuring cup. Rather, measure before you cook it, and then you know. And I'm still Jewish. I still like to make sure that everybody's got enough food. So I will often actually add 2 extra portions, just in case. You never know. So that's my thing. Then for dessert. Now, dessert, depending on how many dessert options you're going to have, but dessert works out to 200 grams per person or just under 1 cup. So if you've got more than one option, you're going to give everybody less of each option to make your 200 grams. If you only have one option, then you're going to use a 100 gram measurement. And that works out to be about just under 1 cup per person of dessert. And you will often find your dessert bowls, if you've got a dinner service, are much smaller than your soup bowls, and that makes it look like there's more dessert than there actually is. So that's an important thing. Now I'm going to talk specifically, Yontif. We are coming up, and please God, we will be allowed to have visitors, but it's not looking like we can have too many people just quite yet. So I'm still going to give you the measurements for our traditional Yantav meals, like gefilte fish. Whether you're doing a loaf or you're doing balls, you want, for 10 people, 20 pieces or 20 slices of gefilte fish. About a half a kilo each of chopped herring, Danish herring. And to go with those, you want 20 pieces of kichel. That gives 2 pieces of kichel. Sounds a little schnup, but really, if you've made this huge big meal, you don't want people filling up right at the beginning on your fish course. You want them to enjoy the entire meal. So remember to do that. Once again, 10 people, you need 8 soft drinks or 8 2 liters of drinks. You'll need 2.5 liters of soup, a 2 to 3 kilo roast or a 3.5 kilo chicken. If you're using whole chickens or it has a bone in, then 3 chickens. Remember, your leftover meat and your leftover chicken, if you have any, can be turned into a delicious pie or added into a stew. Absolutely wonderful also as a toasted sandwich. You're going to serve for 10 people about a half a kilo of rice or any other grain and a half a kilo of vegetables. Remember, when you're doing your normal servings and not banting, you will have 1 starch and 2 vegetables. And then lastly, your dessert. You want 2 liters of ice cream and 2.5 kilos of pudding or fruit salad. Please remember that the 2 liters of ice cream and 2.5 kilos of pudding are not the same in weight. So look at how much you are and you can make your different flavors. I really hope that today was informative for you. Please let me know via email if there are any other topics you would love us to cover, just to make things interesting, and especially while we're still not able to have lots of visitors. Thank you for listening to the Essen Freshen Show, where it's all about the food here on Chai FM. I'm Adrian Bugatti, and have a good week and stay safe.